Mrs. Monica Sanjay Gandhi has set up India's largest non-governmental animal welfare organization over 30 years ago. People for Animals, one of the world's most influential animal protection group. The organization has a nationwide network of 250,000 members, operates 26 animal hospitals, 165 animal wards, and 60 mobile units. People for Animals conducts educational programs in schools, lobbies for animal welfare in parliament, and raises awareness among judges, civil servants, and the police. In its dedicated fight against animal suffering and cruelty, People for Animals has secured a number of groundbreaking animal welfare rulings in court. A current major challenge for the organization is the increase in animal rape. Today, I have the great honor of speaking with Mrs. Gandhi about her work and her daily challenges in the fight for animal rights and animal welfare. In addition to building a life's work to protect animals, Mrs. Gandhi has also been an active politician throughout her life. She served as a minister several times, was an environmental, animal, and women's rights activist, and is a writer. Mrs. Gandhi is a member of the Nehru family. She was married to Sanjay Gandhi, the younger son of longtime Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. Her husband died in a plane crash in 1980. I warmly welcome you to Auf Eins, Mrs. Gandhi.
Thank you. Thank you, Cornelia.
Mrs. Gandhi, you see a direct connection between meat consumption and animal cruelty. Meat production in India is a significant industry. Are there sometimes conflicts?
Of course, there is a direct correlation between meat eating, cruelty, because the animal has to be killed for meat. So, and animals are killed, not just in India, but all over the world, in the most hideously cruel fashion. Here, the cruelty starts from when the animal is born. If it's a cow or a buffalo, a goat, they're kept in inhuman conditions. They're trucked miles and miles away. And finally, they're killed by just simply stabbing them or cutting their throats and letting them die over a period of time. Their children are taken away. Now, this cruelty, you know, there was a survey that said, which are the worst places in the world to live? It was done for America. And there was, you know, they said, is it where immigrants live? Is it where the blacks live? Is it where, is it the suburbs? Is it Midtown Manhattan? Where? What is it? And they found that the worst places to live in America were 1 kilometer around slaughterhouses. And not just because of the pollution and the smell of blood and everything. It's because the men who were inside killing the whole day had no problem with coming out, getting drunk, beating their wives, beating their children, killing people, mugging people. It was the most crime-infested area because they then lose their entire humanity. After all, the word animal, Cornelia, comes from the word anima, which means soul. So when you lose your soul, what else is there left to live? So a similar survey was done in India, in which is the worst city to live in. And they found that it was a city called Rampur. Rampur used to be the seat of the Mughal kings. Such beautiful buildings, such, you know, amazing architecture. And now it's degenerated into a city where they produce knives and slaughterhouses. And in spite of everything, it is a place where it's very difficult to live. So cruelty to animals always spills over into cruelty to human beings, always.
Yes, Monica. Would lab-grown meat be a more ethically viable option? It is, you know, grown from animal stem cells, and there have already been experiments with beef and chicken. Would this lab-grown meat even be acceptable for Hindus or Muslims as an alternative?
Oh, definitely. It is the only disruption that will change the world. I am totally in favor of it. I don't believe in mock meat you know, in those other things. But I do believe that if we can process meat, see, you and I can't change the world. We have tried and tried to turn people vegetarian. Somehow it doesn't work, because in Asian countries, for instance, eating meat becomes aspirational. In, you know, places like Africa, they eat everything. In places like China, they eat insects to elephants. It doesn't matter. So to change them is impossible. But if we could produce the same meat for them, which is real meat, it's just that it doesn't involve animals, it would change lives. Not only that, it would stop a greenhouse gases, because methane comes from meat. And methane is 24 times more powerful than carbon dioxide in heating up the atmosphere. So if we could change, if we could create meat without having animals, we would save the forests, because all the forests are being cut down in India, in Brazil, anywhere in the world, wherever there is animal growing for meat, the forests are cut down every day. So, and that leads to global warming again. So A, you would keep your forests. Two, you would not have this smuggling that goes on. In India, all the smuggling is done by one particular community in trucks, and they go at night, and you stop them, and it becomes a, you know, a religion thing where people fight all the time. It's a big divide between Hindus and Muslims only because of this meat smuggling or this animal smuggling for meat. So that would stop. India would become a happier place. The world would become a happier place. The quicker we can do what we call clean meat, which is meat made from cells, the closer we will get to a peaceful world.
But how is the opinion about this lab meat, let's say in India?
We're okay with it. We're okay with it. It's just that it's expensive at the moment. But as more and more people take to it, I'm sure it'll become cheaper. There is not just lab meat. There's also lab milk. And that would save millions of dairy cows from suffering.
Is it the same thing? Do you think it is the same thing when I grow meat from stem cells and do some artificial milk?
Yes, absolutely. That's not artificial milk, it's real milk. It's just multiplying the cells. After all, everything is multiplying. My body is a multiplication of my cells, right? So is meat. It's just that you're eating it. So yes, it is the only answer to a greenhouse gases, to forest, to living well, to so much water is spent on animals grown for meat. You know, one cow uses 60,000 liters. I imagine if that water was available to humans, it would be so wonderful. So yes, clean meat is the only answer to, I would say, 50% of the world's problems. It has a massive spillover effect.
Do you think that lab meat then would be in competition with the meat industry?
Oh, absolutely. But the odd part is that the meat industry and has invested in lab meat. A lot of huge slaughterhouses in America, the owners, have actually bought shares in companies producing lab meat because they know that this will come. It may come today, it may come after you and I are dead. But it will come. That's the only way it can, the world can go. You know, it's a narrow path and everybody has to work on it. So the investment for lab meat is really coming from slaughterhouses. Not only that, the people who have bought shares in this are the world's greatest minds, the disruptors, the people who invented computers, the people who invented software, the people who invented huge, big, what you call Flipkart and Amazon. You know, the online marketplace. These are the people who invested in lab meat.
There were peoples who couldn't have survived without eating meat. At least we think so. For example, the Native Americans who lived on buffalo meat, or the Eskimos who lived on the meat and fat of seals, whales, and so on. What would have been your message to them?
The thing is that this is simply not true. The native Indian, please remember this, an animal makes meat. The animals that we use for meat are all vegetarians. We don't kill non-vegetarian animals and eat them. Nobody eats lions and tigers. They eat buffaloes and cows. All these are vegetarian. Now, to make 1 kilo of meat on their bodies, they need to eat 11 kilos of plants. So it's not possible that humans would only have animals around them to eat. Because what would the animals have eaten? They couldn't eat meat. So they would have eaten plants. Now the plants that they eat are the plants that we eat. So if the native Indians, and in fact the native Indians were actually 70% vegetarian. They killed buffaloes only because A, they were slow moving creatures. So it made them, and you got a lot of meat. So it was easier to get more food by killing an animal than it was to go plant gathering. The same thing applies to the Eskimos. You know, the land is not under snow 12 months a year. There are plants. The animals eat the plants. And then they eat the animals, the reindeer, the other deer. But most of them live on fish. So they could avoid. But they live on it. Let's just start with what we can change. Instead of, you know, picking up tiny little population bits and saying, oh, they can't live without meat. So we should not have, you know, so we should all eat meat. That doesn't make sense to me at all. Okay. If they can't live without meat, they can't live without meat. But we can, you can.
Yes. In India, diverse cultures live side by side. The majority are Hindus and Muslims. Do the two groups differ in terms of animal husbandry, animal welfare, meat consumption, and attitudes toward animals? And if so, how?
Well, I would say that the difference is not too much. The Hindus would like to think of themselves as compassionate and welfareists, but they're the ones growing the animals for killing. The Muslims kill the animals. They run the slaughterhouses. They run the traffic to them. But they buy them from Hindus. So everybody is involved in the making of money. And however, the attitude is that Muslims eat meat, Hindus don't. In actual fact, Hindus now also eat meat because, as I said, it's aspirational. But we are the largest, we have the maximum number of vegetarians in the world. And thank God for that. The thing with Muslims is I simply don't understand their religion at all. If you read the Quran, you will see that the Prophet Muhammad is a vegetarian. And all throughout the Quran, he has said, please don't make your stomach a graveyard for animals. He is the one who originated this statement. The first animal shelter in the world came in Egypt, you know, in Muslim Egypt, not Pharaoh's Egypt. If you look through the Quran, it's an extremely sensitive pro-animal book. And yet the Muslims define themselves by eating meat. You see, the difference between Hindus and Muslims are that some Hindus may eat meat, but they do it secretly. They do it embarrassed, in an embarrassed form. And they also don't make a religion of it. They know that they are breaking the religion to eat meat. But Muslims consider the eating of meat as part of their religion. You will not find a Muslim who says, I'm vegetarian. Because they believe that their religion is defined by the eating of meat. And that's what separates us. And that's what makes Muslims so much more violent. Otherwise, in India, they were responsible for all the arts and crafts. They're truly, truly skilled artisans. All the embroidery, all the saris, all the weaving, all the carpentry is all done by them. And yet over the years, you know, they've become more and more and more violent. And I can only attribute this to their belief. Anybody who kills an animal doesn't have that much problem with killing a human being.
You recently mentioned the increasing number of animal rapes in India. I mean, what kind of people commit such unimaginable cruelties? Are there laws that punish such acts in India?
What's happened is, till recently, there was a law called 377 IPC, in which anybody who raped an animal could be taken to jail for up to 7 years. Unfortunately, the government has removed the law. We don't know why. And since then, there has been a huge amount of animal rape. I mean, we get 2 to 3 to 4 cases almost every week. And it's, you know, every dairy, the cows are being raped by the dairymen. The horse owners rape their horses. I've seen a video, and they video themselves. That's the horrible part of it. I've seen somebody rape a tortoise and video it, a tiny little thing. Kittens, dogs. Now, we've asked the government to bring the law in again, because then you can prosecute these people. So let's see what happens.
So, but what kind of people are these?
What kind of people you have? I don't know. Young layabouts. And also, retired people from good families, believe it or not, whose, you know, wives have died, and they'd much rather they have a dog than another wife. A lot of, you know, 65, 70 year olds, unfortunately. But yeah, but it, you know, I don't think we're the only country. It's just that we have exposed it. I would think that in Pakistan, in a lot of Muslim countries, they would be doing exactly the same. There's something wrong with humans, but they've become so bestial, you know.
Your organization has a nationwide network at its disposal, and you receive daily calls from people reporting acts of animal cruelty I experienced when I was with you. What options do you have to stop them?
Well, we use the police. We use the local administration. Our own people go to court all the time. I mean, we are in the police station all the time. I get about 400 emails a day. And that is 400 police station cases. So we use the police a lot. And sometimes the police are good and sometimes they're really bad and have to explain the law. But that's all we can do. We train people to know the law. We use social media a lot. You know, so it's moving. I mean, 5 years ago, there wouldn't have been any police cases. 5 years later, there are hundreds and hundreds every day because people now are up and ready to complain about cruelty to animals.
And you also have conducted numerous court cases and many nationwide campaigns achieving notable successes for animals. Can you give us some examples? What are your new targets in the future?
Well, our new targets. Well, we're trying to stop dog eating in a state that borders China called Nagaland. They eat only dogs. I think that's because they eat dogs and pigs. So dog eating is illegal. But they do a lot of it. Now, they finished all the dogs in their own state. So they're busy smuggling it in from the rest of India. So we're in court to try and stop that. We're in court to get dairies, you know, to be cleaner, to be in much better surroundings. Because dairies here, their animals are in sewers. They actually are in sewer lines. They stand the whole day in sewer lines. And their milk is filthy. So we're trying to get, you know, dairies to be some kind of regulation to come there. Well, we are in court, I think 350 cases. So, and here in India, law takes a long time. Things that in another country, perhaps in your country, would be solved in 2 months or 3 months will take us up to 10 years here. We're still hanging in there.
And animal welfare is often subordinated to economic interests, or maybe mostly. In the West, animals are categorized as objects. Is that the same in India?
Absolutely. It's economic interest. The meat industry is powerful, and the fish industry is even more powerful because we have fish on three sides. But we have had our successes. For instance, we don't allow fur furs here. We don't allow the export of seahorses. We were doing the largest amount of shark fin export. That's been stopped. So the animal welfare movement is growing. And as we go on, hopefully one day we will be as powerful as the meat movement.
And Mrs. Gandhi, do you have any final message for our viewers, what you want to tell them or advise them?
Become vegetarian or become vegan. It's the only way to save the world. And, you know, at a time like this, where every country is now in turmoil, everyone, where immigration is now, the whole hordes of people are emigrating, especially into your continent, where you have terrible administrations and governments in America, in lots of places, all over the world. You actually need to reassess your own attitude towards the world. That's why I say, always be kind, always. Every single one of us is in their own private hell. Not just animals and insects, but each, you, me, everybody. We construct our own hells. So when you're talking to somebody, or when you look at an animal, or when you look at another person, think, what can you do to be kind to them? That's the only thing that will save our nations, our world. It is because of increasing unkindness that we have global warming. You kill the animals, you create global warming. You kill whole species, your own life goes, the quality of it becomes much worse. It is only kindness. I know it sounds idealistic, but if each one of us were to be kind on a personal level, you would see things change a lot. We've just gotten used to being cruel. We're used to being wicked to each other and to the rest of the world.
Thank you, Mrs. Gandhi. Thank you very much for the interesting conversation.
Thank you. God bless.